Welcome to Open Kwong Door. On today's show, part one of my interview with Kurt Browning.
So I think it's recording.
Hi, everybody. I'm PJ Kwong. Paul Door.
Seems to be working.
Welcome to Open... Oh, I'll start that one again.
Maybe, yeah. Okay, good. And then I'll do one.
So I wanted to interview Kurt Browning because, well, the man's a bit of an enigma to me. As much as he's a performer on everybody's radar as far as figure skating is concerned, four-time world champion, he's also a very thoughtful kind of person. He's always thinking, and he's quite a bit deeper than people may believe. So I was very interested in finding out about his story. Do you remember him at all from being a kid? We're both skaters, after all.
Yes. Well, he was, when I was a skater, he was the big guy that was, winning all of his world championships and everything. And the interesting thing about him is that he was, to me as a young boy, sort of in the world of figure skating, he was, doing all these tricks and jumping and all of this stuff, but then he actually sort of transformed himself into this real performer and entertainer, and you sort of saw the vulnerable side of him in a way. So it was very interesting. And he kind of, you talk to him about that, where he sort of, in the interview where he discusses that, about how all of these different things that are involved in skating.
That's what I loved about Kurt Browning. And knowing him now more as a colleague at CBC, I'm really impressed by the care that he takes in trying to find out about the skaters, and not just for all of his ability to perform. When he's in the booth, he's actually thinking very carefully about what he says. It was really interesting to talk to him. I hope you're going to like the interview. I'm thrilled today to have with me world figure skating champ, four times, not just the once, four-time national champion, three-time Olympian, and the first person to land a quad in competition, as well as being an award-winning show skater. It's none other than Kurt Browning. Thank you for talking to me, Kurt.
Thank you. Silent fanfare ensue. Very nice.
You are a rascally rabbit. Okay, so you and I have just finished talking skating, which we do here at CBC.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to go back, way back to...
And I'll call Rusty.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a CBC joke for you people who grew up with a friendly giant.
And you know what's so fun is the friendly giant tree is on the main floor of this building.
I know. Okay, seriously, like walking by that tree when you're 46 years of age, it's crazy because it's like time travel. So I had to open the door. I had to touch it. Very cool. Anyways, we're off topic already.
There's a shock.
We were ever on.
So here's what I want to know. I want to know, Kurt, as a little boy, you mentioned Friendly Giant.
I did.
What? Tell me about, I know where you're from. I know where you're from. I can find you.
I see you.
That's right. So tell me a little bit about Kurt as a little boy. What were you like?
Okay, I grew up on, and we've talked about this, I use the word farm, but I use it very loosely. We had 360 acres in central Alberta. So I grew up, my best buddy was about a mile and a half up the road. So it wasn't like next door, and there was just a rural environment. So I had the run of the country to do whatever I wanted. I would leave the house at 10 o'clock in the morning, and my mom would say to an 11-year-old boy, be home for supper. And so she doesn't know if I'm lying in the ditch somewhere with a, snake bite. She doesn't know. So there was a lot of freedom, to go swimming, did whatever we did, and we did it unsupervised and built our legs up super strong because we were on bikes going everywhere. And in the winter, there was tobogganing, so back up the top of the hill again. Everything was physical, and it was all outside, and I just loved it. I absolutely loved growing up in that way. Caroline was my hometown, and the population doubled at 9 o'clock in the morning when the 18 school buses showed up, and I'm not making that up. It actually literally doubled. The population doubled at 9 in the morning every day.
Now, you know what's so exciting about Caroline, Alberta, is the fact that I met your mom, I don't know if you know this, but I was an announcer for the very first time for me at Worlds in 1996 in Edmonton.
Oh,
so we shared snacks and beverages in the VIP lounge, to which they no longer invite announcers, had nothing to do with me. But we used to talk about the fact that when I said, oh, you're from Caroline, and she said, actually, no,
outside Caroline.
Yes, because, you know.
Which I thought was so cute.
Yes, if you lived in Caroline, population of 480, well, you know.
79 now, you're gone.
There I left. No, but I was never in. That's my point. No,
oh, you were never there.
I wasn't a city kid.
City kid.
Yeah. Jeez.
Now, you talk about, for instance, so many things that people can relate to, like that ride to school on the bus.
The yellow, yeah, and it was a long bus, by the way, and okay. A lot of bumps in the road. And so the farther back you were in the bus, depending on the mood of the driver, the higher you bounced off the seat when they hit the bump. So, you know, when Dick Tignor would drive the bus, he knew where the bumps were, and so did we, and everyone would get excited, and he would just hit the accelerator and the no axle in the back, the no shocks, and so these are the things that you remember from childhood, and they're great memories. And I loved being, you know, around horses and cattle. I milked cows in the morning and after school. My father had a trap line, so you know he would trap beaver, and I would skin them. So I skinned the beaver and take the. Anyways, I won't get into it, but yeah, that's.
Well,
It was a different time, and it was not leading towards being a figure skater. I mean, there was something about figure skating that it's on TV and it's bright city lights and there's sequins and that had nothing to do with the way I grew up. I like skating.
And how did you end up on the ice? Like, how was there? You know,
I mean, in a small community, especially in Canada, the arena and the curling rink is the hub of the community. There's the town hall or there's the place where they dance, but that doesn't happen too often. There's not dances all the time, but there's always curling. There's always a hockey game. There's always figure skating.
Do you know how to curl?
And No, my father used to caretake the curling rink, but I was so young, I just rode the rocks down to the other end. and that's as far as I've ever got to curling.
They won't let you do that now.
No, I've thrown a couple rocks, and my sister's really good. My father was really good. There's lots of trophies in the house with people bent over throwing rocks, but I don't have any of those. I'm terrible.
So skating.
Skating.
So ended up.
Oh, right. So you skate. Yeah. Right. I guess that was my point. The arena is a hub of activity where people collect together and watch the men's team play while all the kids are underneath the stands playing tag and fighting and having fun and trying to find a quarter to get a bag of salt and vinegar chips. I mean, that was the best. And so that was and skating wasn't figure skating. It was just skating. We're going skating. My mom, Neva, bless her heart, she was thinking, how do you learn how to skate and play hockey if you've only got a practice on Tuesday and a game Saturday morning where you spend most of the time on the bench? I was little. So she put me in figure skating, and I swear I didn't quit, right? I didn't quit because I had ignorance to the fact that you, as a young boy, are not supposed to figure skate, especially Alberta. It's like oil rigs and
tough guys,
bareback riding and bull riding. I mean, and all that stuff. And
rodeo.
And rodeo. And my grandfather started a rodeo, and all my cousins and everyone rode bareback, and I figure skated.
Are you a good rider?
I'm a fair rider. For how much I've ridden, I think I'm good on the back of a horse. I've never rode anything that I knew ahead of time was going to buck.
Okay.
You know, I've never been in the chutes and, you know, pull the thing open and try and stay on for 8 seconds. I wanted to be the clown, ironically. I wanted to stand in front of the bull.
Eh?
And the clown's job in rodeo is very important. He is there to save the rider if they go down.
For sure.
And to distract the bull. And I mean, it's a very, very serious, funny, serious job. I wanted to be the rodeo clown. So when we had flash forward to the future, when I had a chance to do a TV special about my life in Alberta, which was after the Singing in the Rain one, I wanted to do a number where I was a rodeo clown because it sort of was like, you know, this is what I actually as a kid wanted to do. So I got to do it.
You know, it's so interesting when children dream about their life when they're grown up and what it is that they want to be and what it is that they want to do. They can't always put a name to it, but the fact that you knew rodeo clown would be kind of a cool thing. What else did you think was cool?
This sounds... Sounds like I made it up, you know, that I stayed up all night knowing I was going to talk to you today and thought this up. But Gene Kelly movies, Fred Astaire, black and white movies, Errol Flynn, swashbuckling, just the music. And I knew nothing about music. I had a few piano lessons, two, you know, like, and somehow in me was, you know, like I gravitated towards the clown at the rodeo, not the rodeo, not the cowboys. The clown. And then when I watched movies, I really enjoyed the singing and dancing and stuff. So, and this morning, we were watching Footloose and Fancy Free. with Fred. I think that's Footloose and Fred.
I think so.
Fred Astaire.
Yep.
And so I'm sitting on the couch with my son and just talking to him about it, and I'm thinking this still fills me with joy. And so there was an entertainer, a dancer, something was waiting in that little boy in Alberta who was growing up, and I'm just lucky that I found a way to put it out there.
So your parents must have been a little bit ahead of their time, because you, of course, are the baby in your family by quite a bit. There's a little bit of time, years between you and
Yeah, Wade was born, and then a couple of years later, Dina was born, and then a decade later, I was born. And I personally, you know, I think that Mom tricked Dad. You know, I think that there was some tomfoolery going on, and
there always is, Kurt.
Yeah, and I think she just wanted some more company around the house, and that's what I think happened. So I'm really glad, and I'm happy to be here.
We are too.
And what happened was that my father was at a way different place in his career, and he wasn't up in what we called the hills, which is basically the mountains. He wasn't away as much, and he sold part of his career that he never knew he would be able to sell. All of a sudden, being a guide and outfitter was something you could sell.
Oh, okay.
It never was
like the
before.
Goodwill bit, part of the business.
Yeah, and
thing?
So you know, he spent his whole life trying to save some money, and then in one day made almost half of that much by selling his business.
Wow!
So it really allowed Mom and Dad to feel like it's okay to travel with the skating and see it, and pay for skating actually as well. So in Caroline. It's a very rural, very small town. I mean, sorry to hear about your dog. And they said, yeah, he got a tick. I mean, you know, that's how the minutiae
really
of the news. We really knew about each other. So I remember one time at a New Year's Eve party in a barn sitting around on bales of hay. And there was a cluster of people around my parents.
And didn't you tell me that there was a fire in the middle of the barn? What could go wrong, really?
No, that was a different party.
Okay, phew.
But that was a gravel pit party. There's always a fire at a gravel pit party.
Of course there is.
Because you can't.
I'm a city girl, can you tell?
Yes. I'm a country kid, can you tell? What was happening around my parents was, and my uncle was there too, and aunt and everything, and there was a bit of an intervention going on where the community was saying, how do that Neva and Dewey Browning, who do they think they are driving their kid to Rocky Mountain House to figure skate? Don't they know that, don't you know that people are talking behind your back and you're wasting your money and, you know, this is ridiculous, you're figuring, the whole thing, they were really going to set them straight. And they looked at him, and my mom told me that we just said, well, number one, he's our kid, so we'll do what we want with him. Thanks for your concern, and now bye. Like, no. And my dad is a very proud music, like he's a cowboy.
Mm-hmm.
And Scott Hamilton described him as the last real man left alive.
Yep.
And for him to sort of accept the figure skating thing was a little bit of a reach. Like, why are you skating in the spring? And certainly, why are you skating in the summer? Well, to be better. I go,
but it's summertime.
But you skate in the winter.
Yes.
He finally figured it out. When I started winning, he was on board. And but they supported me all the way.
Yep.
And it was an adventure for us. It just was this thing that just kind of kept growing and growing and becoming its own entity that had momentum, the skating career. It took us all over the world as a family. And one of the best things that happened was the fact that Mom saw Paris and Dad went to Australia. And these things probably wouldn't have happened. They would have just saved their money and given it to us when the time came. And
yeah.
And that's wonderful. But I'm glad they traveled and made friends and met you and did all that fun stuff.
I'm really glad to have met them too, because often when you meet a person's family, you can meet a person in isolation, but when you meet the family, it connects a lot of dots.
Now it
don't
makes
you
sense.
Think?
Yes.
And so for that reason, it just really made. We had quite a good time, and your sister was there as well.
Well, they were. They
in 1996.
Dina, yeah, she's the heartbeat of our family for sure. And but my parents didn't really let success get, especially Mom. She just didn't. It just didn't really matter. I mean, her favorite skater was Brian Orser, and her favorite move was the delayed single axle. And after that, she really didn't need to see anything else.
Your kid's Kurt Browning, doesn't matter.
when she was ill with cancer, I asked Brian if he would dedicate a single axle to her. So we went out on the ice during Stars on Ice, and I got the microphone. And this is during the intermission. And I said, Mom, and she's in the stands, and I said, this is for you. And Brian came out and did a single axle and blew her a kiss. And that was my gift. My mother was getting Brian to do that.
Isn't it wonderful, really, when you think about it? I mean, nobody's life is perfect. obviously there are challenges that come with any person's life. But isn't it wonderful, or does it feel wonderful to be able to have offered that kind of a gift? You can't buy that one. You know, I sometimes sit at the Olympic Games as a PA announcer, and I think to myself, even if Oprah wanted to, she couldn't sit this close to the skaters. It's because of my job, right?
Yeah.
So there are some things you can't buy, you know. You can't buy a single delayed axel.
From Brian Orser.
From Brian Orser.
You know,
with
not,
a kiss.
Not dedicated to your mom. You know?
Nope.
And that's what all the hard work has given me is access to a sport that I'm in, but I'm starting to realize as I'm older and working in television and talking to you and doing those blogs and blah, podcasts and whatever, I'm a fan.
Yep.
And I'm a fan. I'm a very demanding. I think I'm quite demanding when I commentate because I'm a fan of integrity when you skate. You don't have to be the best skater. It's when you're not trying that I start to get my dander up and away I go with the microphone and get all on my soapbox and get all about me. And
yeah.
But it's that integrity that I love. And I think that my parents did drive that into me, that you appreciate people who take an interest in you. And
so tell me the story about your mom and the friend coming up. Remember that you were talking?
Oh, yes. Well, that's just rather perfect timing.
I thought so.
You remember everything, don't you?
I try to.
I'm a kid. I think I am. I must be. I have figure skates at the time, so I must be 11 or 12.
Okay.
And so anybody in the community. I get excited when I talk to you.
I see that.
Yes, I'm sorry.
You're not the
only
one.
I'm just going to let people just. I'm going to let people wallow in that last comment.
If you people knew how small this room was. Woo!
Okay. So we're at the store, and everybody knows everybody in Caroline. And so my mom is talking to one of her friends, and as a children, you're seen and not heard a little bit back then.
Sure.
It's reversed now. But I
was... No, they're heard and seen
now.
Yeah,
they're heard, seen, and it's too much. So this one of my mom's friends turns to me, faces me, and asks me about something about my figure skating, which I, you know, was a kind of an oddity in the community. And so she asked me some question. Who cares what the question was? But I was shocked. Number one, I'm being spoken to by an adult.
By a grown-up.
A grown-up. And number two, why do you care about my figure skating? It's not your business. So I was defensive and not prepared for the moment and handled it. Don't remember what I did, but I didn't handle it very well.
And pre-adolescent.
Sure, I was a kid.
Yeah.
So my mom turned to me when she left, and she got right down in my face and said, you will respond to someone who politely asks about your life and takes an interest in what you are doing. And you will, reciprocate that interest in kind with an appropriate answer and be polite about it.
Or else.
And
as moms do.
It was something that I think was the beginning of a message that my parents gave me throughout the successes that I did have. Incredible failures, but amazing successes as well. That when people do take an interest in your career, that you respond in kind with a thank you or a letter or a card. And certainly my mom handled 98% of all the mail that ever came, which was thousands upon thousands of letters.
And
she
how
answered
were they addressed?
Every single one of them. My mom had a stamp made with my accolades on the back that she could just go boom, and stamp it on the back of the picture.
But
and then she always wrote a note.
Kurt Browning, Caroline, Alberta, and it got
that,
there?
That did happen.
Wow.
Oh, yeah, sure.
That's amazing.
So Kurt Browning, Canada got there, too, once.
Did
Kurt
it really?
Browning, Kurt Browning, Canada, and my name was spelled wrong. So
wow.
That was kind of fun.
So at what point, I mean, obviously, so we went out for lunch yesterday with Teej. And Teej.
Tracy Wilson.
And Barb Strain. Mm-hmm. And what we realized is that you're
Researcher
very famous.
Extraordinaire.
She is. Unbelievable.
Barbie.
I tell you what, I've forgotten more. No. No.
She's forgotten more than you ever knew.
No. Yeah. Thank you very much.
No problem.
So clearly you're a very famous man. You've done lots of stuff that people for which you are recognized. And thanks to you, we got free $2 Tim Hortons cards. Woo! Which was very exciting.
And those little salads that came early.
And the early salads.
I take credit for that.
You should.
What was the name of that restaurant? We should tell her. It was really good.
It was really good. I'll find it later.
Yeah, we'll post a blog.
So at what point, is there a point where you all of a sudden realize, oh, wow, the skaters...
You mean back then?
At what point do you realize that people know who you are? Because, you know, skaters work in isolation. It's like small children, you know, they're dancing, and then all of a sudden, you know, they're ballerinas or they're Gene Kelly or they're whomever because they've grown up in isolation. Do you know what I mean? Skaters are like that. And then all of a sudden, bang, there's the glare of the spotlight. So Did you feel it ever at one moment where you went, uh-oh?
Well, ignorance is bliss, and I'm an ignorant guy.
I like to say innocent.
It's nicely done. Meet my new PR agent, PJ.
That's right.
But I didn't worry about it. I didn't seek it, and I didn't need it.
Correct.
So being famous, whatever, not unlike my son, who thinks he's famous because there's a picture of his mother on the billboard.
Yes.
So I'm famous. Actually, no, not so much.
She is.
You're just noisy. Yeah. So I felt the first real moment, or the first one that came to mind when you asked the question, was when Michael Slipchuk, uppity up at Skate Canada nowadays.
Yes, he certainly is.
Who landed quads himself in competition and was a Canadian champion. When he and I were sitting in the dressing room with Brian Orser and Robert McCall about to do a show, I went, oh yeah,
I have arrived.
This is a big deal. And then that night, Mike and Brian Orser and Kurt did side by side double axels in the show in the opening.
Fun.
And it was the first time I'd ever really done a double axel beside anybody, and Mike and I were fit to be tied. It was awesome, awesome, awesome moment.
So there are moments that have been firsts in your career. So I want to take you back there are two things that I want to know. First of all, tell me about being the first man to land a quad in competition, what that moment was like.
Awesome.
Okay. Where did the quad
come
from? Not
at the moment. The moment itself wasn't awesome because I thought they weren't going to ratify it. Not that I even know what that word means. But I did a three turn, which is I just basically landed backwards and I turned forward and then turned backwards again. And there was a turn.
Yes.
It was on 1 foot and I glid. Past tense. That's a joke with only one other person in the world, so probably on your podcast was the wrong time to use it. Now I'm glad you thought it was funny. So I glid for a little bit, and they allowed it to happen. But when I did it, I thought they weren't going to count it.
Okay.
So I was depressed for a little bit, and I had
still while
axel,
you were skating.
While I'm skating. But then I did triple axel, and then there was something else happening, and survived the axel. And there was a little moment where I stopped, and my team, from Canada.
The support team.
Is freaking out. My teammates.
Like, oh, your teammates.
Doug Ledre and Christine Huff and Liz Manley and those guys are like freaking out. And I saw them freaking out and now I'm starting my, dum da dum da dum da 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 dum my footwork, which wasn't footwork at all, oh my gosh. But anyways, I'm doing that and I'm thinking, well, maybe it will count. So now I've got all that going on in my head while I'm skating. The quad was in response to an offer by Michael Barnett, which was Wayne Gretzky. He used to be a hockey player.
Okay.
Wayne Gretzky.
Wayne.
And he said to me, if you land this quad thing, that was his quote, quad thing, I'll get you a car. And so I immediately walked around the corner to my coach, Michael Juranek, and I said, the quad is now the first jump in the program. Because this guy's going to give me a car. So they did. They gave me a nice Audi Quattro.
Nice.
And then sold it and took it back 6 months later. And I thought it was mine.
Thought it was yours forever.
What do you mean you want the car back? It's mine.
So people do not know, though. What gave you the inspiration to do a quad?
The quad itself, I tell terrible stories, but...
You?
No, because I fill in the blanks where I forget, I make up. I was flying. I was flying without... Switzerland.
Let's say Switzerland.
Sure.
Nice hot chocolate there.
And there was this young man skating in, and actually we, and it was a few of the skaters that were doing this tour went to, I want to say Mejev, it doesn't matter, but Brian Boyatano from the United States was skating.
Well-known
he was
skater.
Practicing. And so we wanted to go watch him. And he was in an outdoor arena that was covered. So it was a, he had a...
Like a tarp over the top?
A tarp it was a wooden roof. Actually,
okay,
it was a beautiful arena. And so we were there watching him practice, and he did some quads. They looked so easy, and they were so beautiful, like strong Brian Boitano back outside edge landing, that I went home from that tour and went, it didn't look that hard. But I didn't want people to know that I was trying it. So I practiced at the Royal Glenora Club in Edmonton after everyone left.
Okay.
So when skating was done, see ya, goodbye, walk around the corner. I'm just going to go to the boys' room for a second.
And then you'd wait?
And I wait and then come back out, put my skates back on, go back out on the ice and try quads.
Wow.
By myself. So I did that a few nights. Raydell Rusnak would stay. Yeah, she was pretty. So she stayed. But a couple of nights I was alone, a couple of nights Raydell was there. But when I got it to a place where I was two-footing it or standing up or occasionally landing it, then one day I told my coach, I got something to show you. So I just skated on the ice and kind of two-footed this quad, and he was very quiet. He didn't respond or anything. He went, and then immediately after that, we stopped practicing triple axel, which wasn't going well.
Okay.
And he just said, forget triple axel for now. We're going to put all our attention into this thing. And I just, the triple axel wasn't working.
Mm-hmm.
And then at 1997, at the World Championships, that makes sense? 1987.
Yeah, that didn't sound right.
1987 at the World Championships in Cincinnati, Brian Botano won.
Brian Orser won.
Yes. Sorry, still Brian Botano in my head. I'm new to this. Brian Orser wins, and I was there. And what ended up happening was that I saw Gregors Filipowski doing triple axels, too.
Right.
And I was landing quads at that competition in practice. And
did you have one slated for your program?
No, but but the practice rink was built on styrofoam. Everybody was doing quads.
because lots of spring.
I swear to you, it wasn't even natural. Gregors Filipowski would skate into his triple axel, but he would hit the brakes just before, so he had no speed, and kind of spin it and land it. And I looked at that, and something triggered, and I went, okay, I'm sorry. My double axel's better than that. I can do this. And 3 days later, I flew home. The next day, first day back, landed triple axel, and that was it.
Wow.
So it's interesting that that my jumps came from inspiration.
Sure.
Not from perspiration. And, you know, people say, well, you were a natural. I guess maybe I was.
Well, it's just PJ again. So you see, Paul, for me, there's lots more than meets the eye with Kurt Browning. And that's why we've divided this interview into two parts. I mean, really, he's articulate. He's careful in his comments. And he's really honest. I really enjoy talking to him.
Yeah, well, it's just nice to hear more than just about all of his world titles and all of that stuff. We a lot of people know about that. But it's just nice to hear about his childhood and things like that.
I think so too, the importance of family. So we hope you're going to tune back in for part two. And how do they get a hold of us, Paul?
We're on Twitter, of course, like everybody else. You can get us at Open Kwong Door. And if you want to send us a message, it's contact@openkwongdoor.com.